All the Cards. A wind blew through the tall windows of Scarling's Hall, chilly with mist from the river. It shook the trees across the valley, made the hanging over the great fireplace, stitched with the design of the long eye, flap and rustle. Rickard drew her cloak tight around her and huddled into her hood, and watched the grey water churning far below, and thought about what had to be done. You have to be hard to sit in Scarling's chair. Have to be, whether you want to be or not.
Thinking of jumping? Asked Isern.
It's where the bloody nine fell, or so I hear.
So what's the lesson? Folk who scramble to power up a hill of corpses will always take the long drop down?
Rickard peered down that long drop, then took a cautious step away from the window.
Not sure I like that lesson.
Isern grinned, tongue wedged into the hole in her teeth.
If you only listen to lessons you like, you'll learn nothing. Nice fur you got there.
Ain't it? And Rickard rubbed her hand against it, fine and white and so very soft, stitched onto that red cloth Savine Dan Brock gave her to make a cloak fit for a queen of legend.
A gift from the people of Carlion. Warming to you, are they?
I've always been very lovable, especially with a few hundred armed men at your command.
I find the better armed they are, the more lovable I get. Reckon the townsfolk are grateful I haven't burned the city yet. Seems mercy can work after all. No doubt it has its season, said Isern, and no doubt folk have a yen for it, after Stour's dark moods and mean spirit. But don't get cocky, girl. Gratitude is like spring blooms, fine smelling, but short-lived. I'd keep a torch burning, do you see, somewhere it brings to mind cities aflame. Make sure they stay grateful.
Maybe they'll get you a fur too.
I've no use for one.
Isern gave a haughty sniff and whipped a shred of her ragged shawl over one shoulder.
Perfection cannot be improved upon.
One of the great doors clattered open and Corlith burst in, got the haft of the axe at her belt tangled with her knees and near fell over, took a couple more slapping steps, then stood, hands on her thighs, panting for breath.
Interesting, Isern pointed a tattooed finger at her. This woman is usually quite calm in her manner.
Corlith waved towards the door.
They're coming!
Who's coming? Asked Isern.
All of them.
Rickard could hear the commotion now, a crowd of gabbling voices, happy and angry at once, the warrior's favourite mood. She shoved her hood back and scrubbed some life into her flattened hair with her fingernails, heart suddenly pounding.
They've got him.
Corlith nodded.
They've got him.
Someone sent the other door shuddering open with a kick, and a pack of warriors tramped into Scarling's Hall, laughing and jostling and glowing with triumph. Shivers led the way, with a bottle of spirits that had seen some action, and Jonas Clover, with a shifty lad and a blank-faced woman at his back. The Nail and some big bearded bastard were dragging a filthy, half-naked prisoner by his arms, head hanging and legs trailing limp behind him.
By the dead, muttered Rickard.
The last time she'd seen the King of the Northmen outside of her dreams of vengeance had been at her father's funeral, sleek as a snake and every bit as vicious.
Time has not been kind to him.
Time's kind to no one, said Shivers, pressing the bottle into her limp hand.
They flung him down in front of the dais Scarling's chair was set on, so Rickard stood over him, stood in judgment, where he'd stood over so many others, the stones he lay on stained with the blood he'd ordered spilled.
Welcome back to your throne room, great wolf, she said,
and took a long pull at the bottle, and winced as it burned right down her gullet, while her warriors strove manfully to outgloat each other. Stour tried to push himself up, arms trembling, making a blubbing whimper all the way. Then Hardbread stepped up and kicked him in the guts and knocked him flat again.
"Grovel, you fucker," he spat.
Harsher than Ricka was used to from her father's old white-haired war chief, but men's mercy often runs out the very moment they're called upon to use it. "What's wrong with his legs?" she asked.
"Didn't want him running off."
Shivers shrugged.
"Slit the tendons behind his knees."
Isern stuck her bottom lip out approvingly.
"That'll do it. Here's where Cocky gets you."
And she gave Ricker a meaningful glance from under her brows. Stour managed to get as far as his knees this time, but looking like he might fall any moment. Ricker hardly knew him. His nose was so broke, and his mouth so bloated, and his cheek so scabbed and swollen. Kept licking at his bloody top lip with this little slurp. He stared about like he didn't recognize the place, one of his eyes near swollen shut, and the other with a great red stain on the white. Ricker found she was rubbing gently at her own blind eye and had to force her hand away from it.
"You took Kalian,"
croaked Stour. Even his voice sounded broken. Gloating felt like something of an effort, but folk were expecting it.
"Aye, well," said Ricker. "Leo's little jaunt to the Union seemed like more of a boy's trip. Thought I'd invite King Orso to join you while I stayed here. Make better use of my time. Got me a new chair out of it."
Her warriors laughed, but Stour was in no state to appreciate a joke.
"My father alive?"
he whispered.
"For now," said Isern, "hiding away in the high valleys."
Stour hung his head.
"I'd give anything to get me back."
Something dripped on the floor. Bastard was crying. To suffer bravely takes practice, and he'd never had any.
"I'm the future of the North,"
he mumbled, like even he could hardly believe it might ever have been true. No matter how much pride a man has, it don't take much in the end to beat it all out of him, to make him want nothing but for the beating to stop.
"Blaze!"
Ricker had a real bruiser of a speech all worked out about the wrongs he'd done the North and the price he'd have to pay and how we all build our own gallows and he was about to hang from his and blah, blah, fucking blah. She'd been polishing it up for days like a champion might his feast day helmet. But she felt no joy in crowing over such a broken thing as this. She took another pull on the bottle and nearly gagged on it.
"Please."
Stour's scabbed fingers crept across the floor and plucked at the gold-embroidered hem of her new cloak.
"Please."
By the dead, he stank. When he fought Leo in the circle, she'd felt her hatred for him had no bottom. Now the well ran suddenly dry, and all she had left was disgust for the whole business. But she knew what the lads wanted to see. You have to make of your heart a stone if you want to sit in Scarling's chair.
"You dare touch me!"
she barked and kicked him in the face. Since he was on his knees, she caught him right under the jaw, snapped his head up and sent him sprawling over backwards.
"I'm sorry,"
he whispered, curling up on his side, broken hand trembling over his bloody face.
"Don't hurt me!"
This hadn't been the plan. In the plan, he'd stood up, for one thing, and sneered and spat insults, and she'd burned bright with righteous fury and cut him down with the cleverest stuff you ever heard. But how can you cut down what already can't stand? She curled her lip and looked over at the nail.
"You want to put him in the cage?"
"The one he put my father in."
"Have I got another?"
He grinned, and a fine grin he had. She was quite pleased to have it aimed at her. Then he caught Stour by the hair and dragged him whimpering over towards the cage, his ruined legs flopping after.
"Not killing him?"
asked Clover, the slightest frown about his grey-flecked brows.
"He comes through this alive. I doubt he'll forgive."
Not really the forgiving sort, said Isern, pulling out a lump of chagger and starting to cut a little piece off.
Black Calder even less so.
Clover watched the nail manhandling Stour across the floor.
Just can't see any future where this bastard breathing is a good thing for us.
Don't worry about seeing the future. Ricker nodded towards the sign of the long eye and tapped at the runes that matched it on her own face.
That's my business.
And she plucked the chagger out of Isern's fingers, for it got to her mouth, and stuck it behind her own lip.
I can trust you, can't I, Clover? My father once said that if he ever needed a dependable man, it wouldn't be you. Your father was a straight edge and a fine judge of character.
Clover gave a little shrug.
In my humble opinion, it'd be a mistake to trust anyone too much.
Especially someone already betrayed one master, said Isern, cutting another little piece of chagger from the lump and rolling it into a pellet.
Don't be too generous to me, Isern Ifail. I've betrayed about 5 of the bastards.
And Clover nabbed the pellet from Isern's fingers with surprising dexterity and squinted to the rafters as he stuck it behind his lip, as though bringing to mind the full catalogue of his faithlessness was quite the challenge.
There was Bethard and Glamour Golden and Kerm Ironhead, and I reckon I betrayed Black Calder at the same time as I betrayed his son. Wouldn't be surprised if there's one or two I've forgotten about besides.
And he patted thoughtfully at his belly.
I don't think I flatter myself to say I've betrayed some of the greatest names in the North. But the thing they had in common?
Do tell, said Ricker, offering him the bottle.
They made it stupid for me not to betray him. I'm hoping you'll be craftier.
And he slid something from an inside pocket. A golden chain of weighty links, its dangling diamonds sparkling in the light from the tall windows. The one she'd seen Scale Ironhand wear at the duel. The one she'd seen Stour Nightfall wear at her father's funeral. The chain Bethod had forged before she was born, when he forced the North together with fire and sword.
Guess this should come to you now.
You keep it, said Ricker. Clover's brows shot up.
Me?
Isern's shot up too.
Him?
Bethard wore it, and Scale, and Stour. Look how things turned out for them. Look how they turned out for the North. Don't think it'll suit me. Ricker hooked a thumb into her necklace of green stones and dragged them gently around her neck.
Reckon we've had enough kings for now.
Clover held up the chain, frowning at the dangling diamond.
It'll suit me even worse.
Melt it down for coins, then. Set the stone in your eating knife. Consider it a fair price for bringing me its owner.
Then I will.
Clover tucked the chain back into his pocket.
You are as wise as you are generous, Chief.
I wouldn't count too much on either one, she said, narrowing her eyes.
What happened over in the Union?
I didn't hang around for the outcome. Clover took a swig from the bottle, daintily wiped the neck, then handed it to Isern.
There was quite the battle going on, and I do my best to avoid him. From what I could tell, Orso won.
Ricker found she was rather pleased about that, and not only because she'd betrayed the other side and victory for the young lion could have put her in quite the awkward spot. Never took much to make her thoughts wander back to the palace in Adua, morning sun streaming through the windows. Time had softened the smashing headache she'd been nursing. She remembered also coming through the door, grin on his face, tray in his hand. I brought you an egg. He hadn't struck her as a winner of battles, it had to be said. But then neither had she, and here she was, with Scarling's Hall for her living room. There was a clang as the nail flung the cage door shut on Stour and left him huddled, filthy back pressed against the bars and one hand dangling between them.
Looks like we hold all the cards. You've still got to play 'em right, said Clover,
frowning over at the remnants of the great wolf.
"Carleon's ours," said Shivers.
"And off the north besides," crowed Hardbread. "And Nightfall's men are trickling back wounded and ruined, and Black Calder hasn't much left to fight with, I reckon."
"We should hit him now," said the Nail. "Hit him hard."
"Calder's weak," growled the big man with all the beard.
"Calder's canny," said Isern. "No doubt he'll have spies here."
Stour was one kind of enemy. He'd come right at you. Black Calder was another.
"Doubt he's halfway as weak as he seems," said Ricker. "He's still got friends, and he'll already be gathering them."
"And the year's getting late," said Shivers, nodding towards the white sky outside the windows.
"We need to bring him to us."
Ricker dropped into Scarling's chair and slung her leg over one of the arms, trying to look right at home, though the dead knew there was no getting comfortable in that bloody thing.
"Fight him on the ground we choose at the time we choose."
"How are you figuring to do that?"
asked Hardbread.
"I already know how."
Ricker put a fingertip to her tattooed cheek and gave Shivers a big wink with her long eye.
"I've seen it."
No one laughed at that these days. No one mocked and no one disagreed. There was a respectful murmur at it, in fact. Fearful glances and nervous shiftings from one foot to another. These named men, killers all, standing in awe of skinny Ricker and her long eye. A year ago, she'd hidden from Stour Nightfall in a freezing stream. Now she had him locked in his own cage. She, who used to have fits and shit herself in the streets of Ufrith, had stolen half the north. It was enough to make her burst out laughing, almost, but that would have spoiled the mood.
"Patience," she said softly, tapping at the peeled paint on the arm of Scarling's chair with her fingernail. "We need to chew what we've bit before we bite off more. While you boys were having fun on the way from Ufrith, there's been work to do up here."
"I'm always ready to work," said Shivers.
"We've been laying in food for the winter, and I've a sense folk in the next valley are holding out on us. Might be..."
She glanced sideways at Isern.
"I've been too soft-hearted with them. Need you to take some stonier hearts up there."
The curved reflection of the tall windows gleamed in Shiver's metal eye.
"A warning or a wounding?"
She wanted to say warning, but they all were watching. Watching and judging. And before this set of bastards, she couldn't afford to look too forgiving.
"You be the judge, and take Hardbread with you, since he's in such a bloodthirsty mood."
"Right, yeah."
And Shivers beckoned Hardbread and a few others after him as he headed for the door.
"Clover, Ricker, take your people up to the Redwater Valley. Calder's boys have been busy over there, burned a few farms. Make it clear this side of the river's mine. Right back into the cold."
Clover aimed a wistful sigh at the fire.
"We'd be honoured, wouldn't we, Sharla?"
The blank-faced girl looked blank as ever. Inexpressibly. Ricker beckoned Calleth over as Clover and his people tramped out.
"Get some water boiled and clean that bastard in the cage, eh?"
"Kindness?" she asked.
"On my nose. He fucking stinks."
"I still reckon the moon would smile upon him face down in the mud." Isern prodded at the bars with one blue finger, making the cage turn gently, the great wolf limp as a heap of filthy rags inside.
"Remember when he chased us through the woods, all cold and hungry and not nibbled? Remember how bitter your feelings then?"
"I'm not forgetting," said Ricker.
"He said he'd send your guts to your father in a box. Break what they love, he said."
"I'm not forgetting, but we might yet find a use for him."
"I'll admit he makes a fine adornment, caged in the very cage he had forged, you see.
brought to naught in the very room where his hero, the Bloody Nine, was brought to naught.
She gave a little chuckle.
My da would have laughed long at that one.
And she patted Ricker on her fur-clad shoulder as she passed and pushed the near-empty bottle into her hand.
You're always saying your da was an arsehole. Most yawning arsehole in the whole circle of the world.
She wagged that blue finger.
But he saw to the chilly heart of things more often than not.
And she swaggered to the doorway, gave a great showy stretch, and spat into the hall.
Don't get cocky now.
She pulled the doors shut, and the latch dropped with an echoing clatter, leaving Ricker alone with the ex-king of the Northmen and the nail, his pale eyes on her.
Still say we should hit Black Calder while the hitting's good, he said.
You would. You like hitting things.
You don't.
Not for its own sake. I want to hit once, and that so hard I never have to hit again.
Thought your father swore to see Black Calder back to the mud.
So they say. But my father didn't think much of vengeance, and since he's dead into the bargain, I feel sure he can wait a spell. The nail gave a little grin, tip of his tongue stuck between his teeth.
You're a clever one, ain't you?
I do my humble best. And Ricker realized she was threading her chain of emeralds through her fingers, feeling the cool stones tickle at the webs between them. She gave the nail a considering look. You could not have called him pretty, slouched long and loose against the wall, with his thumbs in his belt and his elbows stuck out and his chin stuck forward. But then Ricker doubted pretty was the first word anyone would have picked for her these days. And there was something about him, all calm and confident and in no hurry, like he was happy in his own skin, the very thing she'd never been. We're always drawn to our opposites, drawn to them and scared by them at once. And where's the fun in someone who don't scare you just a touch? She got up and walked over, taking one more swallow from the bottle. Tasted worse than ever, mixed with chagger bitterness, but it wasn't burning anymore, just glowing nicely, like the embers in the great fireplace.
What do your friends call you?
Asked Ricker, handing him the bottle. He frowned at the little dribble in the bottom, more spit than spirits.
The nail.
Aye, but folk were close. He took a swig of his own, watching her all the way.
Don't have anyone that close. Not now my da's dead.
What did he call you? A pause.
The nail.
Can I borrow that cloak of yours? He raised those pale blonde brows and undid the buckle and tossed it over to her. She wandered to the corner of the hall, taking her time. Felt tense in there, like there was something about to happen, and she enjoyed it. She reckoned she'd earned just a streak of cockiness, whatever Isern said. She went up on her tiptoes to hang the cloak over Stour's cage. Don't really want him looking. And she bent down and pulled one of her boots off, left it lying, kicked the other off into the corner, and it bounced from the wall and fell on its side. The nail frowned over at it.
Why are you taking your boots off?
She undid her belt buckle.
"'Cause I can't get my trousers off over 'em."
That was when she realized skirts have many downsides, but you can step right out of the bastards, or pull 'em up in a pinch, but there's no slick way out of trousers. She got 'em down past her knees all right, then nearly fell over, pulling her right foot free, and had to hop along, dragging the other leg off. Not quite the sultry swagger she'd planned. Maybe she'd got too cocky after all. But there was nothing for it now but to see it through. She wriggled into Scarling's chair, trying to arrange her fine new cloak in a manner that preserved the delicate balance between too much mystery and not enough. The nail considered this performance, then Stour's covered cage, then scratched the back of his head.
Fair to say the afternoon has took an unexpected turn.
A brief silence. Outside, the river thundered. Bad idea, this. One of her worst. She wondered where her trousers ended up and how far the shameful shuffle would be to squirm back into them so she could pretend it never happened.
Not planning on turning me down, are you? 'Cause that'd be quite an embarrassment.
Fuck no.
And he cracked out a grin.
Just thought I'd fix the scene in my mind while I've got the chance.
He tapped the side of his head with the bottle.
It's a good one.
Then he sucked the last drops from it and walked over, undoing his sword belt on the way and kicking it off, which was a hell of a relief, because apart from anything else, the chill breeze through the window was spreading goose flesh up her thighs.
It don't bother you.
He planted one big boot between her bare feet, then glanced over towards the cage in the corner, creaking slightly with his cloak over it.
Knowing he's under there.
It's half the point. He once said he'd see me fucked by dogs.
The nail planted his other boot beside the first.
That was rude.
Now he'll learn I decide who gets fucked and how.
So, you're using me to teach him a lesson?
She turned her head and spat out the chaga pellet.
I guess.
He gave a little giggle.
Grant.
And he tossed the empty bottle out of the window, leaned down over the chair, a hand on each arm, and kissed her on the mouth. A delicate, polite little kiss it was, catching her top lip between both of his and then her bottom lip. So delicate and polite, she almost laughed. Kissing's a simple thing in a way, but everyone's got their own style at it, like talking, like walking, like fighting, like writing. He kept on kissing her, one lip, then the other, and she had to stretch up to kiss him back, to make the kisses a little deeper, to get the point of her tongue involved. And now she didn't feel like laughing anymore, not at all. She slid her hands along the scarred arms of Scarling's chair till they slid onto his, till she was gripping his wrists, till his knees were rubbing against the insides of her bare thighs, just gently, like there was nothing much in it. But to her mind, there was quite a lot in it, actually. He had his eyes open all the time, looking at her, and she had hers open all the time, looking at him. Well, the one that worked. And that felt dangerous somehow, like each little kiss was a risk. She craned up to kiss him harder, but he moved his face away so she couldn't quite get there, and she found she'd made an excited little gasp, and he'd made a satisfied little grunt, and the breath between them was hot and smelled of spirits. Good idea, this. One of her best. She'd got his belt undone with one hand, rather pleased about her nimble fingers, and now she slipped them inside and dug around till she brought his cock out, halfway hard and definitely going in the right direction. She wouldn't say she was drunk, but she was on the road there, rubbing at him with one hand, fingers of the other around the back of his neck, scratching at his red blonde beard with her thumbnail.
I'm gonna need your help with something. She whispered.
Not sure how I can show more willing.
Not that. Well, yes, that, but something else too. Doubt you'll like it.
You pig a hella time to ask for a
favour,
he whispered, nudging at her lips with his.
They say you should always bargain from a position of strength. That's all.
Her turn to gasp as he pushed his hands under her ass, knelt down and pulled her towards him, so her head slid down the chair back and her back slid down the chair seat, and she was left lying half on it and half off it, her bare toes on the cold stone and her knees spread around his head and her hips pushed up towards him, the warmth of the fire on the side of her bare leg and the cold breeze from the window tickling her bare belly. She squirmed this way and that,
couldn't find anything close to comfortable among the unforgiving angles. You have to be hard, after all, to sit in Scarling's chair. Goes double for fucking in it. He grinned up at her over her bush, and she grinned back. "Still need to get me a cushion," she muttered.